What's up? This is Movies on Up, movies that we are thankful for. Attitude is everything. Attitude is everything in this podcast. Attitude is everything with my trusty co-host, Mr. Dave Pacella.
Gobble, gobble.
Gobble, gobble, says the Dave. I'm Ryan. That's Dave. We're Ryan and Dave, also known as Movies on Up in this particular context. Attitude is everything is also commonly known as a tagline. We have a tagline contest every week wherein if you can guess the movie that that tagline belongs to, Attitude is Everything, send your guess directly to us in an email, moviesonup@gmail.com, in a tweet, @moviesonup on the Twitter, or leave it on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup. If you are correct, if we pick you, you may very well be thankful for receiving a prize package in the post from Dave and I.
Yes.
Yes, indeed. Actually, it'll probably be from me.
Yes. I don't do mail.
No, Dave doesn't know how to do mail. That is his deep, dark secret. Not too familiar with the post, but we are familiar with movies, at least a little bit, at least enough to do this podcast for
107.
God,
like
almost
episodes.
A year and a half at this point.
Yeah.
It's been going for a while.
I think exactly a year and a half.
And I am thankful for everyone and thankful for our listeners. So we thought we'd do something a little bit different this Thanksgiving week to stick with sort of a thankful time. We didn't want to do movies that take place at Thanksgiving because that's really
movies
hard.
Movies that are family get-together, movies starring an animal. Those are bad ideas for Thanksgiving.
We've already done those, and they didn't work out quite the way we thought. And I have no idea how this one's going to work out. We had been kind of kicking around this idea for a couple weeks of movies that you're thankful for some reason or another. So I think almost more than any of the lists that we've ever done, this has got potential to be absolutely all over the place.
Oh, yeah. There's no – I dug deep into my feels, and this is all, like, personal
dug
stuff.
Deep into your feelings?
Is that what those are called?
I'm not sure. I don't know what a feel is.
It's that – whatever that is. The thing that – yeah. But I dug into those, and so mine – it's a more personal list.
Are you going to cry this week?
I hope so.
I'm pretty sure this would be a Movies on Up first to actually have.
I'll drop some eye gravy.
Oh, that's disgusting. But that works. Turkey gravy. Well done, Dave.
It's Thanksgiving.
That was disgusting, but well put together.
Much like my girlfriend's cooking. Ha ha!
It's well put together?
Yeah, it looks nice.
Yeah, it smells nice, too. I am thankful for this new recording space because it's easy. We have a lot of room. There's not a physical mic stand for you to destroy and fondle the entire time, though you still manage to do it. But I do miss Aaron making cookies, and I do miss your lovely children. Those are the only drawbacks to being in this studio. So maybe one of these times we'll just bring Kayla in here. Yeah, that'd be great. But without further ado, let's see if the tears or eye gravy starts to flow with your number 5 movie of all time that you're thankful for. I don't even know how we can name this, but you're number 5.
I am thankful for number 5, The Blair Witch Project. Because this, back in 99, like growing up through high school, going to movies was just something to do. Like I did enjoy movies.
Which you covered during my interpretation of The Lion King, why you go to movies in the mid to late 90s.
I don't remember that, but
it was not appropriate for The Lion King.
Oh, it was just something to do, like, and I didn't really care. But Blair Witch Project, by happenstance, we saw it opening night, and it was one of the most, still to this day, the most amazing movie experiences I've had to see it in a packed crowd on opening night before any. This is before spoilers hit the internet and before any of that. So you got to experience it in its full glory, exactly how it was supposed to be. And that made me, from that movie, how much I enjoyed it and how much, like, the movie was so different watching it at home on DVD when it came out and watching it again in theaters a few weeks later. It really made me appreciate movies as an event and not just as something to do. And it made me a lot more picky about what I would see and when I would see it. Like, I generally don't like to go to movies unless it's opening weekend, because I want it to be as fresh as possible. I want the whole audience there to be as fresh as possible. And I want a bigger audience. So it's just more of an event for me. And because in 99, after seeing this, I was more picky and choosy about what I would go see, I feel like every movie experience I have now is more enjoyable because I'm not just going to see Fled. Like, I saw Fled in the theater. Who saw Fled in the theaters? I did, because it was something to do. So I'm a lot more picky now, and I do get, and especially now in the older age with kids and with work and all this stuff, like, I do get to go out a lot less for movies, but it's not just something to do. It's something to experience. And I like that. I like that, you know, when a new Marvel movie comes out or DC movie, me and Jason West have to plan 3 weeks in advance just to be able to go see it. And it's an event. It's not just like, hey, you want to go see Fled?
Fled.
So,
Rat Race.
Spoiler, that's number one on my list. But
Rat Race?
No. Oh. I mean, but it's not like I'm not going to see movies like Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar, just because it's something to do. I'm going to see movies that I really want. Yes, I've been disappointed before, but at least I got that experience out of it.
I think with the ticket prices, nowadays especially, sometimes, you know, it can be really expensive just to see everything in the theater. So you really do have to pick and choose. And I think a lot of people, you know, with VOD, with digital, with all the other ways that you can see a movie now, why would you plunk down $10, $15 to see something, but, you know, in something like The Blair Witch or with a truly great comedy, seeing things on the big screen. I talked about it when I saw How to Train Your Dragon. Seeing that in IMAX 3D, absolutely worth it. It was a great experience. And I think that's really what is going to keep movie theaters relevant is that experience that you just really can't get. Even if it's, you know, they talked about that Tower Heist from last year where that was going to be like a pay-per-view opening night. You could either go see it in the theater or you could spend, gosh, I want to say it was like $40.
It was ridiculous.
It was very substantial, but I think they ended up pumping the brakes on that. But that's just something that you can't and you won't be able to get in your, no matter how big your TV gets, no matter how great your sound system is, you just don't get that collective experience of being scared shitless in a room full of other people.
I mean, I saw Major Pain in the theater twice. Would I even go see it once now? No. Second time.
Sir, no, sir!
Yeah.
My number five is a movie that I did not see in the theaters. I would have been a little young to see it in the theaters. It is, at the time, a movie that my mom wasn't very thankful for. It was 1987, Spaceballs, directed by Mel Brooks, starring Mel Brooks, John Candy, Rick Moranis, et al. For weeks, I can remember my mom and I would go down to the local video store, and she would always pick up this movie, Spaceballs, and she'd say, oh, Ryan, this looks cute. You should rent it. Because she knew even in, I guess we would have been there maybe in 88 or 89. So, I mean, I was 5 years old. At that point, I was still well into my Star Wars fandom. And, you know, she clearly realized that this was some sort of spoof or parody of Spaceballs or of Star Wars. And I guess I really didn't. I don't think I got parody as a 5 or 6 year old. And it wasn't Star Wars. So what the hell do I want to watch this for? It looks like a bad version of something I like. Eventually, I think I did relent and watch Spaceballs. It turned out my mom was right. I did love this movie. And at first, I didn't get all of the jokes the first time around. I loved Rick Moranis' Dark Helmet. I thought he was so funny. He was a little short guy, and Darth Vader was a big, tall guy. I loved that. But this is one of those movies like Ghostbusters, which does not make my list, though it very well could, that the older I get, the funnier it becomes. You mentioned it when we talked a couple, I guess about a week ago, Edgar Wright, how the more you watch his movies, the more jokes you get. It's just like that in, you know, a Mel Brooks movie. I think it has to do with not only the more times you see it, but the older you get while you're watching it, you get more of the jokes. They go over your head when you're a kid. And the same can be said for me and Mel Brooks. I don't know how long it would have taken me to actually figure him out or get to see his movies had it not been for Spaceballs. But since he spoofed something that I was into and my mom rammed it down my throat, I liked it so much that, you know, years later I ended up going back and watching Blazing Saddles. I was really pumped up for Men in Tights when that was going to come out. Because, oh, that's the Spaceballs guy. Oh, that's Yogurt. I can't wait. And even going back now, I own High Anxiety because I get what he does, and I like it so much. I think that it's possible, I think it's likely, that I can quote more lines from Spaceballs than I can any Star Wars movie, and that's saying something. Mostly, it's saying that I will never again feel the touch of a woman, but that's okay, because I've got Spaceballs.
I saw Spaceballs in the theater, but I enjoyed it at the time. I was about 9, I believe, then. My number 4, this is where I might get emotional, because growing up, I was always cynical and never believed there was that one person you're supposed to spend the rest of your life with. And a lot of times you don't believe that until you meet them. And that happened to me in 2007, thank you to this movie, when I met the love of my life, the woman I want to spend the rest of my life with, as she portrayed Jenny Ryerson in Bottle Rocket, starring Anna Kendrick, Nicholas DeGosto, and Rhys Thompson, who now goes Rhys Daniel Thompson. I love this movie, and this is the beginning of my Anna Kendrick obsession when it came out.
I think
out.
It's the beginning of most people's. Well, I don't know how many people have an Anna Kendrick obsession. Two of them are in this room.
Yeah.
But if it was going to start.
She was so cute and lovely, but
and
such a bitch and a cunt. Like, and I love that. And I knew then this is what I'm meant to do with my life, is to be with her.
Is to opine after her on the internet.
Yes. So that's my number 4, because I also really love the movie. And the movie
is an awesome movie.
It's a very awesome movie. It's a different look at coming of age and about not fitting in. And it's just a very, very cool movie. But Anna Kendrick.
Yeah. This movie's so good, it probably will get its own spinoff episode. We don't normally plan very far ahead.
Valentine's Day.
Yeah. So hint, hint, if you guys are, and we hope you're still around listening, February of 2014, that will probably be our very special Valentine's Day episode, because we both do love Anna Kendrick. This is one that I saw post-high school, but when I was in high school, I was on the speech and debate team. So that's why I went to see, that's why I picked this movie out. Because I thought, oh, this is going to be great. A movie about speech. I can't wait. And it just so happened that, yes, a young.
You met the love of my life.
A smoking hot Anna Kendrick. The future.
Plus, one of my favorite lines in movie history. There's a cello in your house now. Just the delivery of that line and the context of that line is one of the hardest I've ever laughed at any single line in a movie. And I don't know what has happened to Rhys Thompson. This followed assassination of a high school president and not much else. Like, I love what he does, and he does it very well. And I thought he was going to blossom into this big star, and he just hasn't yet.
A lot of people don't have two great movies on their resume. He does. So they happen to be real early on. That's all right. Put together two solid seasons and then retire. You have a better career than most people. My number 4 comes from a director that has, I would say, has a real good career. Started real hot. Maybe kind of went through a valley. I think definitely kind of went through a valley in the late 90s, early 2000s. But I would say he's rebounded quite nicely. That is, of course, Quentin Tarantino. And my number 4 is sort of the number 1 in my heart with a bullet. It's kind of his first big-time writer-director gig. It is 1992's Reservoir Dogs, starring Harvey Keitel, Tim Roth, Michael Madsen. It's not going to come as a surprise to most people that this is on my list. I do like Tarantino a lot. But it also changed the kind of movies that I started watching. When it came out in 92, I was in the third grade. So I really didn't rush out to the theaters to see this movie. But having caught it on video, I think I was in middle school at the time, or late middle school, I think it actually made my head blow up. The violence in it was really nothing that was new to me. I grew up on horror movies. One of my favorite movies growing up was The Thing. There's nothing in Reservoir Dogs that is worse from a violent standpoint than The Thing. But what actually did make my brain blow up was the writing that Tarantino does, his style. He was the first guy that made me conscious of the fact that every movie that I had ever seen before and will have seen since, or will, I don't know, that English is not my thing, but was written on a page by a dude or dudette, whatever. I understood and appreciated the concept of a story, but dialogue, the dialogue that I love Tarantino for. It's real dialogue that isn't really there to advance the plot, but it makes the characters seem real. That was incredibly new to me. And maybe I'll get a little misty-eyed here, but say what you want for Tarantino. He's a weirdo. He's a creep. But Quentin Tarantino changed the way that I watch movies, and it started with Reservoir Dogs. So thank you, QT. Appreciate that.
I do love some Reservoir Dogs. My number three goes to me in high school. I loved the little TV show called The State. I was really one of my only friends that loved it. My friend Zane and I really loved it.
For a correspondent.
Yes. Nobody else really into it. And I kind of felt alone for liking it because me and Zane were the only ones that loved The State and loved Mr. Show. And then I moved off to Ohio, and I just – because once I went to CBS and left and that ended, The State – I didn't – I mean, Michael Ian Black showed up on Ed, but there wasn't –
which was a great show.
I did love Ed. There wasn't a lot of The State around. And then 2001, Wet Hot American Summer comes out, and it was fantastic. I had never forgotten about The State and how much they helped shape my sense of humor along with Mr. Show like that. A teenage me is where that's where my sense of humor came from is The State, Mr. Show. Wet Hot American Summer came back and just kind of reignited that fire. And then even better than just bringing it back into my life and giving me all this other stuff. Like now I could follow all of them. And I followed everyone in The State since then and Mr. Show. I'm lumping them together, even though they don't one has nothing to do with this. But even more than that, the friends I made when I moved to Ohio loved Wet Hot American Summer, and that introduced me to more people that loved The State. So some of my best friends in the world now are ones that I met after this, and I'm not going to lie, we bonded over The State. Me and Westy, when we lived in the apartment together, had every episode on VHS. We watched them. We watched Wet Hot American Summer. Like I went and I took a
group.
Did
you and Westy live in 1993?
No, but they did.
You did have a VCR.
Before it was released on on DVD, we had our friend Jeff Breeze had every episode on VHS that we took and watched them. And a group of friends, we went and saw The 10 where David Wayne was supposed to show up but had to cancel last minute and did a video thing. So it's like this introduced me to my group of people, and it made me feel better that, like, oh, I'm not the only one that thinks this is funny. Like, there's more people like me, and this kind of helped me find them. And those people are still some of my best friends today.
You always have movies that are kind of a barometer of, are we going to get along? If you like Fled, maybe we won't get along. But if you like Wet Hot American Summer, then we will laugh about the same things, and you're not an alien. So that's definitely one. I really didn't get into The State too much because I'm significantly younger than the rest of you old bastards. But I did catch Wet Hot American Summer, and that's one that I can still watch. And you know, I guess I kind of look at the dreamy eyes of Bradley Cooper and Amy Poehler, and those are the ones that like they have absolutely blown up. And I guess I followed them more so than Michael Ian Black. But I love that movie a lot, and really funny. Maybe that's why we get along. My number three is not a comedy. It is not a little tiny cult movie. It is a movie from 2001 that made quite a lot of money. It was directed by Peter Jackson, starring Elijah Wood, Ian McKellen, Viggo Mortensen. It is The Fellowship of the Ring. I didn't read a lot of books as a kid. I don't read a lot of books now as an adult, for that matter, either. But my favorite book as a child was The Hobbit. My aunt had a very big illustrated copy that I stole from her, and I still have to this day. Eventually, I did buy a replacement because I'm not a complete jerk. But because of The Hobbit, I kind of dove deeper into the abyss that is the Middle Earth books, and I really ended up liking the Lord of the Rings series. And the first time, I cannot remember what movie I was seeing. I was probably maybe a junior in high school, and I didn't follow movie trailers nearly as much as I don't follow them now. But as soon as like the first shot for this trailer appeared on the screen, instantly I knew what it was. And I was out of my mind excited. I had no idea how the hell they were going to take this book and make a live action version of it. I had seen the Hobbit cartoon from, I think it was the mid to late 70s or whatever, and I loved that. And I could see how you could do an animated version, but live action, I couldn't imagine how they were going to recreate the locations and the creatures, but I couldn't wait to see them try. And I think it was a ballsy choice to do live action, maybe a ballsy choice to have picked Peter Jackson at that point, but he was absolutely the perfect guy to do it. He was a fan just like most of the rest of us. And I think he's actually one of the best directors of our generation. He's got a lot of stuff that is really, really good and really, really varied. It's easy to be that guy that says, well, it's not as good as the book. But I got to say, I actually think I like the movies better than I like the book. And this might come up again, but this movie has given me quite a few years of anticipating future films in the series. If The Fellowship of the Ring and Return of the King and those three didn't turn out as well as they did, I wouldn't have the slight disappointment, which was The Hobbit, that'll be more than overshadowed by the overwhelming excitement I'm going to have when I leave the theaters after seeing The Desolation of Smaug. But I have several years ahead of me to look forward to all these movies. And thank you to Fellowship of the Ring for that.
My only regret on Fellowship of the Rings is I did not see it in theaters. I didn't think they could do it, so I thought I don't need to see the Lord of the Rings movie. And then the first time I watched it was in a bar.
Oh, no.
We had access to a bar that had a big screen TV, so I invited a bunch of friends and we sat at the bar and I put it on the big TV. And that was my first experience. Not much later, I went back and rewatched it on my own in a quiet setting and fell in love with it. And this is another one Jason West and I watched a lot in the house. We both fell in love with it at the same time. We went and saw Two Towers. We went and saw Return of the King. So this one I do have good memories of because Legolas, like me and West, that was always a running thing, is just how awesome Legolas is. And I do love this movie, but I wish I wouldn't have missed the boat on it. I'd rather jump on late than never at
than
all.
Miss it at all. This was one of my favorite, accidentally, one of my favorite movie-going experiences, because realizing that they were making a trilogy, having read the books, I knew, you know, kind of what was going to happen. But a lot of the people that I went to see it with, like opening day, I don't think knew it was a trilogy. So when this one ends, it just kind of ends completely out of the blue. I heard so many people just like get pissed and want their money back. And I just kind of sat back there very, very snide and just kind of I did my nerd, I'm better than you. Can't you read a book, which has been done to me several times since then.
Can't you read the one book I've read?
Exactly. That's it. Like I've got a stable of four books, or no, wait, I guess I have five. Four by Tolkien and one I loved, Harold and the Purple Crayon. That's my the end of the books that I've read.
My number two.
And 50 Shades of Grey.
Yes, you did read 50 Shades of Grey.
I did.
For reals. That's not a joke.
Nope.
For my second one, this one is kind of serious. Like I've joked around a little bit, but I've credited my brother Gary on this show many times for my love of movies, because I didn't want to downplay with my number five. I still did love going to movies pre-99, and most of those movies were with my brother because he would want to get away for the night and say, hey, I want to go to the movies, and he's so much older than me, my parents would be like, yeah, you can go if you take your brother. So a lot of movies I would see were with him, and we would do a thing that we would watch a movie and then hang out and just sneak into another movie as it was starting. So we would catch sometimes 2-3 movies in a day. And I don't know, 6-7 months ago, he came down with stage 4 pancreatic cancer that since then, this incurable cancer that the only options were it doesn't get any bigger or it grows. It's been shrinking twice, so he's beating this unbeatable cancer. And whenever I think of my brother and I think of my love of movies, like I credit it directly to him. And the first movie that always comes to mind is my number two. It's Point Break, because my brother had no right to be taken. I was 13 at the time. Like, there's no reason to take your 13-year-old brother to see Point Break.
And, yeah, there is.
Huh?
Yeah, there is.
In hindsight, yeah. But at the time, nothing about this movie should have worked. We went to the movies, and I loved it. I loved this movie so much. 13-year-old me, little adrenaline boners. Like, just, I was so on board with this movie. And usually, every time a movie would end, he would say, either, do you want to watch another one, or what do you want to see next? And one of my favorite movie-going stories is that right after Point Break was over, I'm like, the credits are rolling, and I'm like, amped up and like shaking with excitement, and he goes, what do you want to watch now? And I said, this again. And he goes, okay. And he got up and he got his more popcorn. I sat in that same seat until the next showing, and he came there and watched it with me the entire time. Like, I'm sure he didn't want to watch Point Break for the second time in a row, but he did. And he could have easily snuck out to another movie and just came back to get me, but that's one of my favorite memories of my brother, is that I made somebody sit through Point Break in the theaters
twice
in a row, not just twice in a row. And I love that movie. Like, I unironically love that movie. Like, I legitimately care about that movie, and I love that movie. And a large part of it is because of my brother. And it's fun to joke about. Like, yes, it's ridiculous. I love Point Break as much as I do, but I do when I own it, and I don't care. Like, I love it, and I absolutely love it. So Point Break is my number two.
Did you ever fire two guns simultaneously while jumping through the air? That kind of makes me a little bit sad. I didn't have an older brother. If I was able to go to see a movie that was R-rated, like, my dad had to take me, and he would take me to see Crimson Tide, like things that he wanted to see. And I guess my mom was like, yeah, you can go to the movies, but you have to take Ryan with you. And I was like, really? You're not really doing me a favor here. Although, like, my grandfather, I remember, took me to see Universal Soldier, and I was probably like 10, and that was awesome. But yeah, cheers to grandpas and older brothers that really don't care whether or not you should be in this movie.
I mean, this
but you're gonna love it.
This is why, like, I remember, this is why I grew up, I didn't grow up on Disney movies. Like, I grew up on horror movies, and Friday nights, my brother would go out to the video store, my parents would take him to the video store, and he'd rent movies for us to watch. And instead of renting, I don't know, kids movies, I'd be stuck home on Friday night. Not saying stuck home, but like, I'd be at home, 4-year-old, 5-year-old me watching Maniac Cop with my brother. And it was movies like that that I grew up on. And I do credit my brother for a lot of that. And I do, it did mess me up. Watching these messed up movies when I was younger, it messed me up. So it makes me a lot more lenient on what my kids can watch. Like, I don't care that my 4-year-old loves Walking Dead because she realizes it's not real. So she's been watching it every season since it started. So, like, I don't care that my kids watch that stuff because I came out fine. And as long as they can establish reality in movie, then I'm fine with them. It's the second they start thinking it's real, they're done watching it. But I credit that a lot to my brother.
And I can't wait in 15 years, actually, well, probably like
when one of them's pregnant.
No, I was going to say 20 years to listen to Kayla's movie podcast. Yeah. It'll be great. My number two? Is that where we're at now?
Yeah.
I don't really like this movie a lot on its own, but what it gave us, I like an awful lot. So just stick with me here. It's from 2000. Directed by Bryan Singer, starring Patrick Stewart, Hugh Jackman, Ian McKellen. It's X-Men. Though I think you could make the argument that I'm about to present a little easier for maybe Sam Raimi's 2002 joint Spider-Man. Without X-Men, we do not have the Avengers or really any of the Marvel properties that we have now. By 2000, comic book movies were kind of dead. Blade was still around and kicking, but I don't think that most people thought or think to this day of Blade as a comic book character.
Batman had been driven into the ground.
Right, had been mercifully put to rest by that point. Superman had crapped out at that point. This movie made damn near $300 million worldwide. It spawned a couple of sequels that were and a really rad reboot to boot. Not to mention helping to establish nerd fare in general as legit box office material. And you trace it back from here. If X-Men doesn't succeed, we don't have Iron Man. We don't have Captain America. We don't have the Avengers, we don't have Guardians of the Galaxy. Some movies that, you know, you and I are really excited about the possibility of seeing don't exist if Bryan Singer doesn't make a movie about Wolverine.
Yeah, and the argument's valid. Like, yes, Spider-Man came out a little later and was a bigger hit, but that is directly related to how big of a hit X-Men legitimized comic book movies again. In a time where comic book movies were a thing of hokey, X-Men came out, had a decent-sized name cast, with Halle Berry and some. I mean, it wasn't. Yeah. They weren't huge names.
Patrick Stewart at that point.
Yeah, Ian McKellen. Like, it came out and made it a legitimate type of movie, and it did well, and people liked it. So when Spider-Man came out, does Spider-Man do as well
without X-Men?
Without X-Men? Maybe not, because people are looking at it as a legitimate movie now, and it did massive. Because if X-Men did as well as it did, and then Spider-Man kind of bombed, then we don't have the influx of comic movies that we came. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they're both to credit. And I think they both helped each other out, because I think X-Men got people more excited about Spider-Man, and then
Spider-Man was a better movie. I like that movie
more. And Spider-Man
more.
Did what it was supposed to do, and it built up this steam ball that we got a lot of comic book movies coming out. And it was, if the one to follow the X-Men would have been like the first Hulk.
Or Ghost Rider.
Yeah, maybe we're talking a different
how
landscape.
How bad Nicolas Cage sucks.
Yeah, a different landscape of movies now. But because these two made it legitimate, made it fun, made it an event, made people want to go out. And I mean, just look at Comic-Con since then, and that's kind of, for better or worse, ushered in the, oh, this is a legitimate subgenre of people that we need to target. So that's why Comic-Con has so little to do with comics now and more movies. And it's
movies, TV shows, but targeted genre stuff. I mean, you know, books.
It showed the power of nerds.
Yeah.
It really did, for lack of a better word. It showed the power of what the buying power, and it almost made it like, yeah, comic books aren't for kids. It almost made all these 25, 30, 35-year-olds that are still reading comic books come out and say, like, oh, you like that? Yeah, they've been awesome for a while, like it before this movie. So it kind of, I think it did a lot for comic books and comic book movies, both of them. Like, I think it helped usher more comic books into a legitimate thing that wasn't just for kids anymore. My number one
is X-Men from 2000.
If you've ever heard me talk, this is the most predictable number one I've ever had. It's a movie I love. I'll watch anytime I can. I'll watch it multiple times a year. Of any movie in the history of the world, this has probably brought me more joy than any of them, because I cannot watch this movie without a smile on my face. And it goes back to when I was only 5 years old, when Gremlins came out. I loved it as a five-year-old. I loved it. I loved the sequel. I saw the sequel in a drive-in. I've watched it so many times on VHS, on DVD, on TV. I could go months without seeing it and then just randomly smile to myself when I think about the Gremlins Christmas Carol,
yeah.
or at the bar. Like, it's one of those movies that just I'll randomly think about, and it just instantly makes my mood better. And it's a movie I can watch with my kids. Like, yeah, it might be a little terrifying, but they like it. They love it. They love how funny the Gremlins are. They love Gizmo. So, like, it's a movie that...
And they're into Phoebe Cates. I've seen the way your son looks at Phoebe Cates, and I don't blame him.
Yeah, but this movie's brought me so much joy, and I can watch it with my kids. And when they get knocked up, I'll watch it with their kids. And I love this movie, and I cannot... This is a barometer. Like, if you mentioned Gremlins unprompted, I love you. I really do.
That's how you and Aaron met.
Yes. Like, if you mentioned Gremlins out of nowhere, like,
I
want you in my life.
Several times.
And I just, for a movie to bring this much joy, like, shows how powerful movies can be. Because this isn't a life-changing movie. It's a silly, it's a Christmas movie with monsters in it. And for it to bring 20, almost 30 years now of just joy to me, from the second I saw it to every time I rewatch it to when I rewatch it with my kids, or I rewatch it by myself, or I just think about it. I love this movie probably more than any other movie, and it shows me just how much a movie can make you happy and make you just in love with movies.
I'm kind of glad that for your number one, it's a movie that you love. Because my number one is a movie that I do not love. It's almost on the opposite end of the spectrum. It is.
Is it The Phantom Menace?
It is. 1999's Episode One, The Phantom Menace, directed by Mr. George Lucas, starring Liam Neeson, Ewan McGregor, and Natalie Portman. not everybody, but a lot of people hate this movie. And believe me, I understand why. You don't need to write me the reasons because I've already written them down myself. But with that being said, everyone hates this movie, yet it is, domestically, the fifth highest grossing movie of all time. There's a reason for that. And the reason is myself and a bunch of nerds that were 15 years younger than me and 50 years older than me were so hyped for this movie. I had never been as excited for something before 1999, before seeing that movie on opening day. And I don't think I will ever be that excited about anything again, except for maybe the possibility of seeing episode 7, but you know, who knows. It gave me almost a solid decade of reading about and anticipating new Star Wars movies from episode 1, 2, and 3. Yeah, spoiler alert, the movie didn't quite live up to the immense, and I cannot stress the word immense enough, expectations that myself and everyone else put on it. But without this movie, you've got a franchise that's been dead since 1983, but because of episode 1, mostly because of people being excited about episode 1 and flocking to see it, and it making a ton of money, it pretty much rang the cash registers for 2, for 3. I want to say like 3 of the top 10 domestic grossing films of all time are Star Wars movies. And I have a hunch that there's probably going to be at least one or two more places that get eaten up by the next 3 Star Wars movies that we have. You know, as much as you like Gremlins and that kind of, if somebody mentions they like Gremlins to you, you instantly know you're going to get along. If somebody tells me that their favorite movie of all time is episode 1, I'm still going to want to hug that person because we are, on a fundamental level, going to get along. I go back to just the feeling that I got. The anticipation, I think, for that movie was much better than the actual product itself. I used to run home from school every day to watch Total Request Live because the music video for Duel of the Fates was on there. Plus, you know, whatever other Linkin Park, Limp Bizkit crap. But I knew there was going to be Star Wars on MTV, so damn it, I was going to watch it. So excited for that. And I'm kind of looking forward to, I was a freshman in high school when that movie finally came out. And I'm looking forward to feeling something like that again with episode 7. And I've already been burned, but it is not going to stop me from probably weeping in anticipation for this.
And I mean, it brought it back. Not that Star Wars was ever dead, but without episode 1, do we get Clone Wars, which was a great cartoon?
No, you don't.
The resurgence of the essentially fan fiction, the expanded universe book. So it was a terrible, terrible thing in the history of this country, but it served its purpose and it did something good. And this is another one. I was there opening day. It was such an event. And to just be in a room with so many people where you could just feel the disappointment was almost like my number 5 with Blair Witch Project, where you could feel this, just everybody felt the same way. And
everyone was horrified.
You could just feel like I'm in a room full of people that are having their childhood toys just broken in half and kicked and set on fire right in front of their eyes, and we're paying to see it.
A lot of money. I mean, it never did get all the way up there, but I think for a while it was the second highest grossing movie of all time behind Titanic.
Yeah, and you know what? I hated it. I didn't like, three was okay. I am super on board for 7, so whatever they're doing.
Yeah, I think that, they've kind of addressed some of the problems from the first 3, but I'm still that excited. If we do this list, I was going to say, if we do this list in 10 years, after I've seen, maybe the new trilogy, I still think this has to be number 1 on my list, because if it's not for this, I don't get episode 7, which I think could end up completely redeeming everything, like Darth Vader himself.
Yes.
Do you have also rans for this list?
I have one.
I don't think I did.
I do, because I have one that I was torn on, and it's Clerks, because I've always been a creative guy that always had these ideas for movies in my head. But growing up in Indiana, it's like, I'm just a dude from Indiana. You don't make movies from Indiana. And then Clerks came out as I was hitting high school, and it's like, oh, you can just do this. Like, you could anybody from anywhere
can just set up a black and white camera.
Anybody from anywhere can just write a movie and make it happen. And that, not that I've accomplished anything since then, but it's always, I still write, I work on stuff, and just nothing has happened. But at least Clerks planted the seed that, oh, it could. Like, something can happen. So that was really my only close one.
That was the first Kevin Smith movie I saw, but it was much later. It was way later than 94, but that's what got me, oh, Jay and Silent Bob's out. Yeah, I'll check. That movie came out when I was in high school, and I had seen Clerks maybe a year or so before, and I was like, oh, Jesus, these guys are back, and they've only been gone for a year. This is great. I didn't have very, very long to wait, but I guess having worked in retail, maybe I have a greater appreciation for it. And maybe that's why I think, that's why maybe I'm thankful for it, because not that I had all those experiences, but to a lesser degree, I've certainly had some of them.
Because you've sucked 37 dicks.
Yeah. My nickname at the video game store was Snowball. So that's what Dave and I are thankful for. We would be thankful to hear from you guys. What movies, you know, maybe did your big brother or big sister take you to see that you had no business seeing, or, you know, something that brings an incredible amount of joy to you? It would bring a lot of joy to Dave and I to read those things, and you can get at us in any of the following ways. You can send us an email, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can tweet your thoughts directly at us at moviesonup on the Twitter, or leave a post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup, or head on over to moviesonup.com and leave a comment in our section there. It would do a lot to decrease our ratio of comments to spam. So we'd need a lot of help in that department. Leave us a review on iTunes. Let us know what you think. We're also on Stitcher. A bunch of ways you can listen to us or get at us. We'd appreciate you participating in any of those. If you'd like to participate and get at Dave in some fashion that is not necessarily tied to movies, you can do that in these ways.
At Dave Bacella on Twitter, DaveBacella.com. My other show, we should have our cranberry sauce extravayam-yums this week if all goes according to plan. That is at EricandDave.com, Eric with a K. That is Eric and Dave talking with Eric and Dave.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Gobble, gobble.
Gobble, gobble. And until December.
Eat it up.